I'm Raka Banerjee alongside Paul Blake, and this is the Development Podcast from the World Bank Group.
We're coming to you from Washington, D.C. and around the world. And on this edition, we're looking at the private sector, how it's being impacted by COVID-19, and what role it will play in a recovery.
It's both a supply and a demand shock, and it's affecting the real sector in ways we didn't see it during the 2008 crisis. If you look at production, employment, trade, all are down. And I worry greatly for emerging markets.
As economies lock down, what does it mean for people and companies, both in the formal and informal economy?
1.6 billion people make their livelihood in the informal economy. We know that that is going to be drastically hit as a result of the COVID crisis. And how will those people be able to put food on the table and keep a roof over the heads for their family? Very, very disconcerting.
Plus, Raka runs us through the latest economic forecast numbers, all that and more here on the Development Podcast. So Raka, let's dive into that data.
So for this episode on the private sector, I wanted to get together some data for us on which is the general state of the global economy in this time of COVID-19.
Yeah, I can imagine it does not look good, but go on then. Tell us what you found.
Yeah, you would be right. And I'm largely pulling from the bank's Global Economic Prospects Report.
That's the one for folks who don't know. That's the twice yearly report that essentially takes stock of the global economy, and it makes forecasts about where economists at the bank, experts at the bank, think things are headed economically.
Yeah, exactly. So the numbers are pretty stark, as you can imagine. So for example, right now, the bank is currently forecasting that the global economy will shrink by more than 5%. So by 5.2% this year alone.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. When I used to work as a reporter, we would file stories when GDP forecasts would change by like a few tenths of a percent.
Right.
It's pretty extraordinary to see, a forecasted change by more than 5%. Like when I saw that email go out, when that report was released, I had this sort of like cartoon sort of eyes popping from my head moment where I kind of had to rub my eyes and be like, am I seeing that correct? I mean, I knew it was bad, but that's an extraordinary number.
One thing.
I haven't read. Yeah. I mean, tell us, though, how does that compare to 2008, the years after 2008, you know, the recession that came from the global financial crisis and was born out of that?
Yeah. So this is exactly one of the things I was looking up. So what I found was, according to Capital Economics in London, the world saw a 1.6% drop in global output at the depth of the 2008 financial crisis. So at its worst, it was a 1.6% shrinking of the global economy. So in comparison, this recession is expected to significantly exceed what we experienced just a little over a decade ago. It's actually expected to be the deepest recession since World War II, according to, you know, the colleagues who put together the Global Economic Prospects.
Let's just take a moment to like let that sink in. That's a huge statement. Like, the deepest recession since World War II. And it makes me sort of wonder, you know, within that, like breaking that number down, that 5.2% contraction and the deepest recession since World War II, that's across all economies around the world. But how does that, when you kind of break into that in, you know, across different income brackets, are low income countries going to be hit harder, or more well-off countries like Western Europe or the US going to fare better? Like, how does that sort of break down underneath?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the 5.2 is the global average, right? But it turns out emerging markets and developing economies are actually being hit less hard relative to advanced economies. They're expected to shrink by about 2.5% this year relative to 7% for advanced economies, for higher income economies.
7% contraction, that the higher income advanced economies, 7% contraction, and the lower income emerging markets,
2.5%. That's right.
Wow.
But I wouldn't look just at those numbers, you know, because low income countries also have a lot more vulnerabilities when it comes to healthcare services, when it comes to access to medical equipment like ventilators, when it comes to their water and sanitation situations. So it's hard to compare when you just, you know, boil it down to those numbers.
It just gets like way more complicated for them because they'll, you know, infrastructure issues and everything else. Like the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, I've been doing a lot of these interviews for World Bank Live over the past few weeks, kind of looking at the different ways that COVID-19 is impacting global development. And something that keeps coming up in all of these interviews, and maybe not all of them, but many of them, is this idea of like the informal economy and informality. And, yes. And my understanding, and you tell me where I'm wrong, is that's when workers and businesses are kind of aren't on the grid. They're not on the radar of regulators and institutions. So my question for you is A, am I getting that right? But is B, informality and the informal economy playing a role when it comes to the predicted economic downturn?
Yes, absolutely. So informality is actually a huge thing in terms of understanding the outlook for the global economy. So looking at the Global Economic Prospects Report from last year, from January 2019, the informal sector is a huge part of emerging markets and developing economies. On average, the informal sector accounts for about 1/3 of GDP and 70% of all employment. And more than half of that is self-employment. So That's already huge. And then looking at some countries, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, it actually accounts for as much as 90% of all employment and about 2/3 of GDP.
So it's basically an understatement to say that informality is a huge vulnerability for a lot of countries, I think. And the thing that kind of pops in my mind is that means that those people working in the informal sector, they have much less of a safety net. They're much more exposed to these negative shocks, like say a pandemic or a worldwide recession. Yeah, exactly. In part, you know, my understanding is that's because like when they're not on the radar, the government institutions, they're just not connected to them. They don't necessarily know who people are. They don't, and because of that, they don't know how to reach them, right? Like they don't know how to bring those social safety net programs to them, whether it's a stimulus program or some other kind of program to help them in this moment of crisis. That's at least what I've been hearing. Is that, am I understanding it correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And people in the informal sector don't have access to, you know, these more formal mechanisms of pension, of social security, all of these sort of government programs that could be supporting people in times of crisis.
Sort of blunting some of the worst effects.
Right.
But I don't want to drag on and hold you for too long, but can you talk through some of the specific sectors that are being affected? Like, what can you tell me about how the coronavirus has been affecting different parts of the economy?
So one thing that I've noticed as I was doing research for this episode is that countries that are highly invested in certain sectors are definitely suffering disproportionately.
So just as a quick pause there, when you say highly invested in certain sectors, in other words, that's countries that sort of have most or all of their eggs in one basket, like that old saying, kind of they're highly concentrated.
Yeah, exactly. There's, you know, a lack of diversification in their economy. So, for example, countries that depend really heavily on oil are going to have a hard time responding to the steep decline that we're seeing in oil prices. So, for example, in March, we saw the steepest 1-month decline in oil prices on record.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that countries that are heavily dependent on tourism are probably also reeling or certainly will be reeling in the coming months, given that, you know, during this crisis, non-essential travel has, I think, probably all but ground to a halt. And if we're headed into this massive recession, people might not have that disposable income they need to go on vacation or engage in tourism. Have you seen anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And right in thinking of tourism, I'm looking at island countries like the Maldives, Aruba, Seychelles, the Bahamas. When you look at their GDP and tourism as a percentage of their GDP, it's for all of them, it's more than 20%. And for some, it's as high as almost 40%. So when you couple the shock to travel that's we're seeing already due to the coronavirus, and then also when you add the effects of our current climate catastrophe that we're facing, it's really a very dangerous combination for some of these vulnerable countries.
Yeah, it sounds like it. But thank you so much for doing all this research and really giving us the background into the economic outlook for the world as we all continue to reel from the impacts of the coronavirus.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much, Paul. The pandemic has forced an economic lockdown around the world, companies and their employees are under pressure. To better understand how the private sector is being impacted by COVID-19, as well as the role that it can play in leading the global recovery, Paul recently spoke to the International Finance Corporation's Chief Operating Officer, Stephanie von Friedeberg.
Well, let's jump right into it, Stephanie. You know, obviously, over the past few weeks, much of the focus has been on the health dimension of the pandemic. But the coronavirus is also having this severe economic effect across the globe. Can you talk to us a little bit about what the impact is that you're seeing, especially when it comes to the developing world?
I don't want to make light of the humanitarian crisis. I know it's unprecedented in our time, but the global economy is truly suffering. We're estimating that the recession will be substantially deeper and longer than what followed the 2008 crisis, and especially for emerging markets. It's both a supply and a demand shock, and it's affecting the real sector in ways we didn't see it during the 2008 crisis. If you look at production, employment, trade, all are down. And I worry greatly for emerging markets. We have already seen somewhere in the range of $100 billion leave emerging markets since the beginning of January. And we're estimating that foreign direct investment will be down 40% in both 2020 and 2021 from its base in 2019. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm anticipating a recession deeper than anything we've seen in the last generation. And it's going to affect the poor and the most fragile the worst. And I'm quite worried. And if you put that in perspective of what we're seeing in both Europe and the US in terms of the ability to create liquidity in the economy and to provide support, in our countries of operation, the fiscal space just is not there. And the only way that we will prevent a catastrophe as a result of COVID economically is to rely on the private sector.
Many of the hotspots, at least to me, to the somewhat untrained eye here, they seem to be in advanced economies. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you think the poorest economies are going to be hit so hard?
So let's start with the health aspect. In our countries of operation, we have lower living standards and we have poor health infrastructure. In 34 African countries, less than $200 per capita per annum is spent on health. If you look at just the medical infrastructure in and of itself, and then you add to that poor nutrition, lack of sanitation and clean water, you exacerbate the problem. Probably even more important is the fact that much of these economies are informal. And that informality actually is done in a very social way in very congested and overcrowded cities. The ability for our countries to be able to enact social distancing, tracking is virtually impossible. And then if you add on top of that the idea of lockdowns and stay at home, it's extremely difficult to do when your economy is informal and when you're driving growth in that direction. So that's kind of the health picture. And then I turn and I look at the economic picture. So the majority of the economies in our countries are not nearly as diversified as they are in the United States or in Europe. Many of them are dependent on global supply chains. And as we have already seen, these global supply chains have been substantively disrupted. And as I follow the press, I listen to things should be nearshored, things should be onshored. And I wonder, how does a country ever survive if its reliance on global supply chains is broken? Then we have other countries that are heavily dependent on commodities. And we've seen what's happened to the price of oil. It's crashed. We have mines shuttered all over the world. And when I look at the rate at which we're anticipating the US economy and the European economy to come back, the prices of commodities are not going to go up anytime in the near future. And then we have countries that are dependent on tourism and travel. If you're the Maldives and you have climate change and COVID, does your tourism sector ever recover? And finally, I would look at remittances. In some of our countries, remittances represent as much as 40% of GDP. And we're anticipating for the lower middle income countries a decline of more than 20% in remittances. How will the poorest and the most vulnerable survive if that path to income is disrupted?
And, you know, one of the things, Stephanie, that I think makes this crisis so unique is the widespread shutdown of just large swaths of the economy. Can you talk me through some of the challenges that these lockdowns have posed for the private sector, both for the companies in the private sector and for the workers that staff those companies?
So, Paul, I would start by saying it doesn't matter whether you're in a developed country or a developing country. Locking down an economy creates insolvency. And what we're going to see is a rise in unemployment and a loss of jobs, liquidity issues at the firm level, and the longer the lockdown lasts, the more probability of insolvency. So if we go back to this notion of an informal economy, 1.6 billion people make their livelihood in the informal economy. We know that that is going to be drastically hit as a result of the COVID crisis. And how will those people be able to put food on the table and keep a roof over the heads for their family? Very, very disconcerting. We're actually anticipating for the first time in 25 years that Africa will experience a recession.
In a moment, I want to shift this conversation, you know, towards the response and the work that the International Finance Corporation is doing. Can you talk me through, you know, the basics and the need-to-knows of the IFC's response and how it will, you know, help address some of the challenges that you've been telling us about over this program so far?
Our intention is to try, to the extent possible, to help prevent the destruction of markets and the destruction of companies. We're trying to ensure, to the extent possible, that we keep as many jobs as we can in emerging markets. And again, if we go back to what we know, if liquidity leads to insolvency and we lose existing companies, we know that the path to restructuring and recovery is going to be all that much more difficult. So what we first decided to do was to design a fast-track $8 billion package to make available to our existing clients. These are real sector clients and financial institutions across the globe. $6 billion of that $8 billion we will make available to financial institutions, large institutions in all of our countries of operation, to do primarily two things. First, to ensure that trade continues to flow. And second, to help them reach out to the microfinance and the MSMEs in their countries of operation. Again, the bottom of the pyramid, the smaller companies, the informal sector, where we want to try to the extent possible to preserve jobs. The remaining $2 billion of our phase one package is designed for the real sector. We've never tried it before in any other crisis, but in looking at this crisis and understanding that it was not necessarily just impacting the financial sector, but the real sector, we believed that we needed to find a way to help our existing clients who were in sectors like tourism, retail, transport, power. And so we set aside $2 billion to provide liquidity to those existing clients, in a way as a bit of an experiment, but a very important one.
Stephanie, thank you so much for being here and for taking the time this morning.
It was great. Thank you very much. Good program.
You know, Raka, the idea of informality, it keeps coming up in the conversations I've had with our colleagues, that some of the interviews I've done. It just seems like it's, you know, been this huge challenge during the immediate response, and it's going to continue to be a challenge as the world and all these different countries sort of make that transition into recovery and not just immediate response.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think informality is just one of the key reasons why low-income countries are so vulnerable during this pandemic.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's there's so many complicating factors, but that one seems like a particularly sticky problem.
I totally agree. Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of the Development Podcast.
As always, we welcome your feedback, questions, ideas, whatever you want to send us. Drop us a line using thedevelopmentpodcast@worldbank.org.
And if you haven't already, we would love it if you subscribe to this series on whatever your favorite platform is for podcasts. We're on Apple, Spotify, and many more.
Yes, please subscribe. Don't miss an episode. But in the meantime, stay healthy, stay safe. We'll see you back here again soon. Goodbye.
Goodbye.